Coming to you live from Beaverton, Oregon, it's the Hand Plus Podcast, where each week I, Joseph Fricke, and my co-host Tristan Mayer break down this week in streaming. We keep you up to date in the news, we keep you up to date with what you watched. We're just a general streaming podcast, basically. You know, there's all these streaming services out here, whether it's HBO Max, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Disney Plus, Peacock, Paramount Plus, Tubi, Freevee, all these streaming services. You're inundated, have no idea what to watch, what's coming out, where things are streaming. That's what this podcast is about, you know. We're not really a big deep dive one way or the other. Obviously, you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan. Tristan's a big Star Wars fan. Sometimes if there's a bigger show coming out, we'll spend a little bit more time talking about it. But generally, we just try to be a general, you know, streaming service podcast, kind of keep people in the know of what's going on. Tristan, I'm going to ask you the same question I do every week. How was your week in streaming?
Well, last week I was pretty busy. I watched a ton of stuff, and this week I watched not a lot. I was busy in my personal life and in my work life, and I didn't have a chance to watch a ton of my streaming content this week, but thankfully it was a crazy week of news. I feel like every single day we were getting like just some absurdly huge headline, whether it was directly related to streaming shows or just to like the general drama around studios right now. It feels like Warner Brothers is on fire, and if it's not Warner Brothers the next day, it's Marvel, you know, so it'll be a fun one to talk about. Even if there was not a lot of stuff that we watched, I feel like there's a lot to talk about still, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Surprisingly, kind of the kingpin, the streaming service that's been dominating the conversation since we started this podcast, we have nothing to say from them. They didn't really drop anything big. They had a making of The Last of Us that that Tristan should probably watch. I'd need to watch The Last of Us first, but we might talk about that next week. But other than that, they had zero major news announcements this week. So really, HBO Max, I'm sorry, but we just really don't have much to say about you this week. So
all of the news in HBO Max right now is definitely revolving around Succession. They had their premiere like the last couple of days, and that season premiere comes out next week, I think it is. So about time we cover next week's episode. I might end up catching up on Succession. You know, okay. I've tried it a few times. I never really got super invested into it, but I might make an excuse. Now it's the final season. It seems like they're really excited about it and proud of it, so I'm going to give it another shot.
All right. And so we're going to jump right into Amazon, and the first news story we have is that Variety is reporting that Blade Runner 2099 series is going to be directed by Game of Thrones alum Jeremy Podeswa. Probably not the exact correct pronunciation of his name, but I'm going to say two things. A, I didn't know we were getting a Blade Runner 2099 series at all, so I'm excited about that, and also the fact that they're coming out with talent right away directing it, and I believe Ridley Scott's producing it. How much that really means? Are they just giving him a bunch of monies to use his name, or is he going to actually be directly involved? That I don't know. But Tristan, kind of what are your thoughts on this story?
Yeah, this has been a story that's been kind of like in development hell for a long time. You know, it was announced even before 2049 came out, and they haven't still yet to make ground on it. So I'm happy that they're actually going to make it happen, because I thought for a while this was not going to happen. You know, that between all the different, whether it be the pandemic or studio changes, that it was just not going to end up coming out. But I'm really excited for it. And I think Amazon has shown that they're willing to invest a lot of money into making a really good series too. You know, like you might not have loved Rings of Power, but I think you can tell the money was spent on the screen to make it look good and make it feel good and make it seem like a cinematic level experience. So I feel like if you do that for the Blade Runner world and you can really bring that movie back to life and that world back to life, that could be an incredible place to want to go back to. Like, you look at 2049 and you can pause like any random screenshot of that movie and it's going to look incredible, you know, and a lot of that comes from the attention to detail, the visual effects, all really taking the time. So I'm glad this is taking this time to get off the ground. I'm glad that they have some talent attached to it, and it all feels like good signs to me. This is going to be a great show, and that they're not going to just drop out something that nobody watches and then no one talks about afterwards. It feels like something that they're going to really be wanting to push behind and the money behind to make it something good.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The only concern I'd have if I was Amazon is Blade Runner, the original, bombed at the box office. It became a cult hit, cult classic. And then they released Blade Runner 2049, Warner Brothers did. And that didn't exactly thrive in the theaters either. So if I'm Amazon, I can understand why maybe it's taken time for it to get off the ground. Because, the Blade Runner IP has shown that it doesn't carry a lot of weight outside of hardcore film fans. Like, I don't know if calling something Blade Runner 2099 is potentially going to attract viewers. Obviously, Last of Us, big show, big numbers, but it was still could be an entry point into a world. It was just a kind of remake or reimagining of the first game in a series, where I think a lot of people could see this as almost the third part of a story or the fourth part of a story or whatever it is. And people who haven't seen the original movie, never saw Blade Runner 2049, just might be like, well, I don't know that world, I don't know anything about it, and may not check it out, even if you don't need to know anything about either of those stories.
Yeah, I'm curious about it, because I do think that Amazon needs like a really good critical hit, even if they don't have like a huge numbers hit. I feel like it would be really good for them to get something where it's like, maybe this gets a bunch of Emmy wins, or it gets a bunch of award recognition, and it gets kind of trending online for how well made it is and well shot it is. I feel like that can do a lot for the brand and a lot for, you know, the IP as a whole, even if the single show doesn't take off. I look at something like Andor, and I feel like Andor didn't necessarily do great numbers, but I do feel like it helped the Star Wars brand a bit more. You know, it helped people look at Star Wars in a better light than they were beforehand, and I feel like this show could be that. Maybe it doesn't knock off the record books of Amazon viewership or something, but it could be something that gets a lot of critical acclaim and a lot of attention to the service from a different demographic that's not just, you know, the boomers are going for right now with their content.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, they when they go for a show, they swing hard. Like,
The Boys.
The Boys. Invincible. The Boys is a show they put a lot of money in. Invincible is a great show. Like you talked about, Lord of the Rings: Rings of Power wasn't a show that I was not necessarily into, but there was definitely a lot of production value in it, and they definitely like tried. And so I'm expecting a show where, like, you, whether you like it or not, you're gonna walk away from the show knowing that they tried, at least with this show.
Yeah, that's all I really want. You know, I want to be welcomed back into this crazy cool world, and I want to see how great it looks, you know?
No. All right, some other Amazon news. Ben Affleck's Air, massive critical hit. I don't know how many reviews it currently has on Rotten Tomatoes, but last I checked, it had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It could be 2023's first big awards contender, and Amazon decided to do a full theatrical run starting April 5th before its prime release. And I know Ben Affleck, he wanted to release it in December. He wanted to have it be in awards contention. And who knew a show, or not a show, a movie about just getting Michael Jordan to sign a contract to be with Nike would make a movie a massive hit. Like, I saw the trailer, and honestly, when I watched the trailer, I'm like, this seems like a failed Super Bowl commercial. And I'm curious to see the movie, because honestly, based on the trailer, it didn't intrigue me that much. I like Ben Affleck as a director. I know his kind of one miss, Live by Night, I didn't actually end up checking out, but his other ones I like, and they're a lot different than this movie. So curious to see what drew him to this story. But what are your thoughts on this?
I'm super excited for this. You know, I'm thinking Ben Affleck is in a really exciting part of his career. You know, I think he was great in The Last Duel, and I think he's found a great niche for himself as, like, not necessarily the lead all the time, but as, like, the supporting guy that shows up and steals every scene he's in and kills it, you know? So I'm excited to see his performance, and it's not just his direction, but I'm excited to see his performance. It looks like he really leans into the goofiness. He has, like, this really goofy outfit on in a lot of the trailers, and I'm excited to see Ben Affleck ham it up, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's had a week for himself, too, with the James Gunn headlines and the DC headlines. He had a great interview where he kind of dived into his personal life and his relationships and his struggles with addiction. And, of course, the only thing people took out of that was his jabs at DC, because that's all everybody wants to talk about, is like the superhero toxicity or whatever. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this a lot, and the reviews definitely turned me. It's sitting right now at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Granted, it only has 11 reviews, but it just screened at South by Southwest, and the raves have been, you know, out of the charts, you know. So I'm excited to see this one, and I hope that it can maintain the momentum, you know, because sure, it's early, but like, Everything Everywhere All at Once was already out this time last year, you know, and it went on to win Best Picture. So I feel like even though they're releasing it at an odd time necessarily for Oscar push, I feel like Everything Everywhere All at Once changed the conversation for me of what an Oscar movie can be. You know, there's not really a set definition anymore. So I can see this scraping it together and pulling it out at the end of the year. I'm really excited to see it. And yeah, who knows? We just did the Oscars, 2 weeks ago, and we're already talking about the front runners for this year or next year.
Honestly, I think April 5th, I think both ways, it's a genius time to release the movie. It comes out basically about 5 days before NBA playoffs start. So during the NBA playoffs, they can just hammer commercials for this movie and try to get NBA fans and basketball fans to the theater to watch it. And then, you know, it'll run probably through like mid-June potentially and kind of fall out of theaters. and then pop up on Amazon Prime potentially if they want around that August, September. Give people time to forget about it. Pop up in September, right in time for its Oscar push. I think April 5th, great time to release it. You can get the box office money, and you can go for the Oscar push later.
I'm with you on that. I think it was definitely a good release date for it, especially now that we're looking at the shape of the year, and it seems like a lot of the bigger franchises might not be coming to fruition this year. Even if they come out at all, they're not necessarily becoming the big hits that they were seeming to be staples of. So this could be something that sneaks in and becomes a huge hit.
Yep. All right. You want to move over to... one of the topics I was going to bring up kind of reminded me of what I was saying with Amazon. Do you think with streaming and a lot of these streaming movies, we're going to see more Oscar winners released earlier? Because you can kind of do what I say. You can kind of release your movie in like that March, April time. Give people time a little bit to forget about it. And then, you know, put it up on a streaming service around August, September and remind people. They're like, oh yeah, I love that movie. That movie's great. They rewatch it again around August, September, just in time for the Oscar campaigning to begin.
Yeah, I think that's going to be something people are trying. And I definitely think we're going to see a lot of different attempts at how to market an Oscar movie, when to release an Oscar movie. And we're seeing a lot of focus at this point on less about the theatrical release date and more about the streaming release date, right? Because I look at something like The Haunted Mansion and I think, why is that releasing in like July, you know? And then you look at the dates and you realize it's releasing in July because they want it to be streaming on Halloween, you know? Mm. So I feel like it's an interesting time where they're trying to figure out how to balance both worlds. And like Ben Affleck wanted it to be last year, Amazon wants it to be this year. Can't wait to see how it turns out for both of them.
Yeah. Very curious. All right, over to some Netflix news. We have Zack Snyder confirms that an RPG game based on his upcoming film Rebel Moon is in the works. Now, I know you're a much bigger Zack Snyder fan than I am, and I know he's worked in the past. He's like had a deal with, I believe, EA or somebody to make video games, and none of them really ever came into fruition. But kind of what are your thoughts on Zack Snyder pushing to make a game for a movie that's not even out yet?
I feel like it's a sign that both him and Netflix are very confident in this movie and that it's at least going to like attract some people, you know?
Yeah.
I get nervous because his last work with Netflix, Army of the Dead, I think had moments and things I enjoyed, but as a whole, that was pretty disappointing in it overall. So I'm curious to hope. I'm hoping this is a lot better than that, right? And I think it will be. It seems like it's a much more big and ambitious project than Army of the Dead was, but I'm curious. When they say they're releasing a video game, are they going to release it independently, like through EA, or are they going to release it through Netflix? Because Netflix is also trying to push their gaming division a little bit still, and they're trying to get people to stream gaming on their platform in a different way. So I haven't read the news on which studio is publishing that game for him, but I am excited for it. You know, I love Zack Snyder movies. I love the worlds he creates. They're so visually engaging and so cool, and I feel like that's something I'm looking forward to with this game, is just being able to walk around in the Zack Snyder world, being able to look at his set pieces and, you know, see those characters and those settings come to life. I can't wait to play it. I hope it's good, because it could easily just be a bunch of bloatware that they push out to market the movie and it makes okay sales. It's like an okay game, but nothing special. I hope they really make this a good one.
I mean, here's the thing. Back in the day, like when a big action blockbuster came out, there was always a game based on it. Like I remember there was a Batman Begins video game. I don't know if Dark Knight got a video game, but I remember Batman Begins. Like, you know, if things were coming out now with every Avenger, you know, every MCU release, there would have been basically a video game to go with it. Would have been like a crappy game, and that's kind of why they don't make them anymore, as they all sucked. But it is kind of interesting that we're potentially going back to that model with video games being a much bigger market and making a bunch more money than these movies are. I think it'd be an interesting landscape if we slowly make our way back to that, with these bigger tentpole $300 million movies also had, you know, quality video games to release with them instead of kind of the garbage they peddled out with them.
Yeah, because I played a lot of those like tie-in software games when I was a kid, you know, all the Harry Potter games. I played those, and some are better than others, and I hope this is a better one. Yeah, because like you said, gaming has changed so much and it's so huge, and I'm really excited that like they're launching this new IP and this new franchise they're really confident in, you know. So as some of the bigger franchises are starting to hit their brakes a little bit, it's leaving some room for some exciting new stuff to pop in. Like, I can see this really being a big hit in a year where Marvel and DC aren't necessarily hitting big and things like that.
Yeah, and for anyone who doesn't know, this movie is essentially his reworked pitch that he gave to Lucasfilm for a Star Wars movie idea that they rejected. And I don't think they necessarily reject it based on quality. I don't remember if I've talked about it on the podcast before, but kind of the plot, not the full plot, but kind of the basic synopsis dropped. And it sounds like it's just Seven Samurai in space, which is a story that Lucasfilm and Star Wars has told a couple of times before. And I feel like it just felt like territory they've gone over, so I don't think it was necessarily like, oh, this movie sounds bad, we don't want to do it. It was probably more of a, we've kind of done this before and we don't want to do it. So I think it still would be a great quality, fun, you know, action blockbuster type movie with some great drama and great action set pieces.
Yeah, I think Snyder works at best when he's working with like archetypes and really kind of basic level characters where he can do a lot with them and not necessarily plot focused, but you know, basic characters, themes, and visuals, and you know, visual storytelling is where he really thrives. So I can't wait to see how he brings this world to life. And yeah, playing it as a video game, I'm even more excited.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's going to be one of those things of like, oh, it's a prequel to the movie that's like an origin story of one of the main characters or something like that.
Yeah, because I know they're essentially planning a whole universe around this, assuming it does well. He has sequels planned and spinoffs planned in his head, so this could be one of the many.
All right, and also somewhat news, we have the trailer for the A24-produced series Beef, which is a show starring Ali Wong and Steven Yeun. Essentially, they get in a road rage accident with each other, and it starts off this whole rage-fueled kind of revenge story between the two. Tristan, you have time to watch the trailer?
I did. I'm looking forward to this. A24 has had some interesting TV work. They work really well with HBO Max. You know, they did Euphoria, I believe, is an A24 production through them. So I'm hoping that they'll bring the quality here. You know, A24 is known for, you know, being the leading voice of indie studios right now, the one people go to for the offbeat stuff. So the trailer is pretty promising. I'm curious how offbeat it's going to get for an A24 thing, or is it going to be a pretty streamlined comedy? I'm excited to see it, though. You know, I love the cast, and the pedigree of A24, I think, elevates it because you think it's like, you know, a pretty good noticer of quality, I would say. They have their misses here and there, but usually they pick up stuff that's good, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited for it. I like Ali Wong, I like Steven Yeun, so should be a good show that we'll definitely be covering on this podcast.
Yeah, I will definitely be watching this. We've seen Vesa come up where I'm like, yeah, I'll watch it maybe if I have the time, but I'm going to be watching this one for sure.
All right, and another thing you're actually watched was Matthew McConaughey's show where he voices Elvis Presley, and that is Agent Elvis. I wanted to watch it. I mostly forgot it was coming out, so I didn't watch it. But Tristan, how was Agent Elvis?
Yeah, I told you guys I was busy this week with a lot of stuff going on, but I made a point to watch Agent Elvis because, you know, I wanted to see Matthew McConaughey play Elvis. I wanted to see his monkey sidekick. You know, there's a monkey sidekick in this who hangs out with Elvis. It's kind of like his right-hand spy man, you know. I had a fun time with this. It's similar to Archer, I think, in its comedy. If you're a fan of Archer, I think you'll like this a lot. It's definitely hyper-violent, more than I was expecting. There's, like, really gory kills and fight scenes and stuff like that. A lot of vulgarity, you know. So if you're into the adult animated stuff, like the Rick and Morty type of stuff, or even, like, some of the darker moments of Family Guy are almost in here, you know. Like, some of the violent turns of Family Guy, so I'm having a great time with this. It's more violent and exciting than I thought it was going to be. The action scenes are really fun and goofy. And, like, Matthew McConaughey is essentially just doing, like, a vaguely Matthew McConaughey-esque Elvis impression. But it works really well for the show, and it's a lot of fun. And I'm not finished with the first season yet, so I haven't yet hit a point where, like, I'm really invested in the plot or anything like that, you know? It's not one of those shows necessarily, but there's through-running characters and through-running stories and things like that I'm attached to.
All right.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to how this wraps up, and I hope it does well enough to come up with a second season because there's a lot of great ideas and visuals in here. It's animated. Of course, Matthew McConaughey is not literally playing Elvis, but the animation style is really cool. It almost looks like, you know, like an opening sequence of a Knight Rider show or something. It has like these really bright reds and stuff like that. It's kind of cool to look at. So definitely a unique animation style, a unique premise, and I actually felt like it lived up to the zany weirdness of that setup and actually leaned into it and had a fun time with the duality of the life and that kind of stuff. So if you want to watch Elvis at the peak of his fame, you know, womanizing, super popular, but also kind of just like a puppet of the music industry, he's very frustrated about that. So you get that complex. complexity of his role in society versus who he actually is as this killer spy, and he's trying to balance both of those worlds, and you deal with the colonel, who this show does not portray as a positive influence on Elvis's life. Similarly to the Elvis movie, you know, they're definitely not holding the punches on how they feel this man influences Elvis in his life and his style. Even in this type of show, they lean into that kind of premise of, like, Elvis is being used by the colonel for his own financial gain, and he's not happy about it. So, like, a good balance of actual Elvis historical stuff and just absurd violence and weirdness. So, yeah, I like it a lot. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, Joe, if you get a chance to watch it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try to watch it this week, which is, I think, my favorite. If we ever make shirts, I think that's going to be the first shirt we sell is. I think I'm going to, as a shirt that just says, I'm going to try to watch it this week. But yeah, so my question, is this like an R-rated show? Is this more like an adult-oriented show, or is this like a family show? Could kids watch it? Or...
Oh, definitely R-rated. Kids should not be watching this. The violence is very violent. There's, you know, sex jokes and drugs jokes and the F-word and the S-words and any other words you could think of that Elvis could be throwing out there. So yeah, not something to show the kids, but once the kids go to bed, you know, watch it, you know, get some wine in you, and you might enjoy yourself.
All right, yeah. I'll definitely be checking it out. I'm excited to watch it. There's another cartoon I got to watch this week for a show I've been watching. And we have some other upcoming. We got Better Call Saul final season is dropping April 18th on Netflix. And Netflix has actually been promoting it hard. So, you know, Netflix and or this universe has been great for them on Netflix. I assume people are still constantly watching Breaking Bad and rewatching Better Call Saul. To the point that I wouldn't be surprised if Netflix greenlights like another spinoff show in this universe that would be like direct to Netflix.
To me, this is like Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul are the embodiment of like what streaming can do for something, you know? Because when Breaking Bad was first on in the first season or two, it was doing okay numbers, but it was honestly like on the verge of cancellation, you know? And AMC had enough confidence in it. It was, you know, affordable than the makes. So they pushed it a couple more years, and then all of a sudden, here comes Netflix, and the show is on Netflix, and the ratings all of a sudden skyrocket. It's all of a sudden, you know, a critical hit every year. It's winning Emmys and left to right, and it's like I don't even know if the show would have made it five seasons if it wasn't for Netflix, you know. And now all of a sudden, has a spinoff and a movie off of the spinoff, and honestly, I think Better Call Saul is better than Breaking Bad. It's more consistent. I think it's very, very satisfying. The final season I thought was just really fulfilling, really emotionally fulfilling. And that last episode left me with just like a hole in my chest, man. You know, it was like, not just is this show over, but it felt like a grand finale to the whole Breaking Bad universe, you know? So if you haven't watched this final season yet, definitely check it out. Definitely binge Better Call Saul if you haven't watched it, because I love that show. I definitely would put it up above Breaking Bad to me, because I just think the characters are really compelling. The relationships are all really compelling. And once this season drops on April 18th, I'm going to go back and watch the season over again, because I can't wait to revisit some of the more heartbreaking and laugh out loud and just ridiculous, but also just genuinely dramatic moments of that show. It balances all those tones so well, and I'm really sad to see it go, but I'm happy it'll be on Netflix for people to watch. And I know Better Call Saul didn't necessarily get the huge sweeping attention that Breaking Bad did, but it did well, and I'm hoping that now that it's all on Netflix, it'll do even better.
All right. Great to hear. I was a Breaking Bad fan. I never actually got around to Better Call Saul, so shows how great of a TV fan I am, I guess.
Now it's on Netflix, Joe.
Yeah, you can watch it all. Now it's all on Netflix. Well, April 18th, it'll all be on Netflix, so perfect time for me to watch stuff. I'm not a big baseball fan, so essentially sports are dead to me until August, so I got a lot more viewing time, but we got the NCAA tournament going right now, so... That's another reason why it was hard to watch stuff, is my weekend was kind of absorbed with basketball. Anyways, over to Disney Plus. The Hollywood Reporter states that Oscar winners The Daniels, who won for, I think, Best Original Screenplay and Best Directing and Best Picture, are directing an episode of the upcoming Star Wars Skeleton Crew. After there was announcement, a bunch of their fans were going crazy, like almost mad at them of like, why are you, like, we want more original movies, we don't want you to waste your time doing Star Wars. And essentially they had to come out and say like, look, we're doing one episode. I think they already have directed it, and they're like, our friend John Watts, who's the showrunner of the show, he also is most known for directing the most recent Spider-Man trilogy, he's showrunning it, and he's like, he was our friend, he reached out to us about directing an episode and over a year ago before Everything Everywhere All at Once came out, and we said yes. And they clarified and said our next project or our next movie is going to be an original movie. And it's just wild to me how much their fans just like freaked out over them directing an episode of television. Like Quentin Tarantino directed an episode of CSI. Okay. It's the one where Justin Bieber gets murdered. So, I think the film community will be fine with them spending 2 weeks directing a television episode.
Yeah, I could see the fear if they were like, oh, the Daniels are directing this entire series, every episode. And it'd be like, oh, that's going to take a lot of their time away from what their actual passion projects might be. But yeah, like they said, they signed on to this before they even started shooting Everything Everywhere All at Once. And a lot of it was because they were not getting work and they needed to, you know, keep their work flowing every couple of days. So if you're working as an independent contractor in Hollywood, you have to work within a certain amount of time to keep your insurance, keep your memberships going. And they literally said it out loud. They said, we did this because we needed to keep our health insurance, you know, and people forget that this is a job. It's not some like dream that you just go and do whatever you want. You know, this is a working job that people do for a living, you know?
Yeah. And I assume there's some level of Star Wars fans that just to be able to say for the rest of their lives, they worked in the world of Star Wars without having to also commit 3 years of their lives to it is probably pretty nice.
And I do think their style will fit really well. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait to see the episode. I can't wait to get a better picture of like what exactly the show is going to be like and what it's going to feel like and stuff. But yeah, the Daniels plus Star Wars sounds really exciting. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the world and what they do next afterwards too. But yeah, this is a good addition. And yeah, we talked about the caliber of the directors of Mando. So I'm really happy to see that Star Wars is bringing out actual experienced award-winning and acclaimed directors to do their TV shows.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of, we got what is his name? And I just watched Rocky III today at work. I can't remember his name.
Carl
Weathers. Yes, Carl Weathers is.
I got half the name.
Is directing this upcoming episode of The Mandalorian. He revealed that on Twitter today. It's called The Foundling. So if you're watching this live, this is somewhat of a reveal if you're not on Twitter, and if you're watching us a day late, maybe you haven't got to The Mandalorian yet. But yeah, Carl Weathers directing this episode of The Mandalorian. It's clocking in, I think, around 35 minutes, so it's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. But something tells me we're going to find out what happened to Grogu during Order 66 in this episode, with a title like The Foundling.
Yeah, I think Carl Weathers will bring a lot of fun to it. His episode last season was really good, and yeah, he's... 35 minutes sounds good to me. In and out, make it fun, you know?
Gives me enough time.
I'll take it.
You know, every week I have a pattern. Last week it was harder to do because it was an hour-long episode, but I usually wake up, set my alarm for 3:05. I wake up, I watch the Mandalorian episode, then I watch the Bad Batch episode, and then I fall back asleep. 35-minute episode is perfect because it gets me basically an hour of being awake, and I fall back asleep. So excited for that tonight. We also have the showrunner and head writer of X-Men 97, Bo DiMaio. He says the show is going to take place a couple months after the original series. And I'll be honest, I never really watched the original X-Men series, but he basically said that, I guess, maybe because of the events of the finale, but humanity is a lot kinder and a lot more warmer to the idea of mutant kind. So...
yeah, I think that makes sense in the way that the show ended, and especially because it's called X-Men 97. The show ended in 96, I want to say, so it makes sense they're going to pick up essentially where the show left off, you know? I think I'm really excited. He's promised that it's still going to make it out in its time frame, but with the way things are shaking up in the post-process of Disney, I don't necessarily know if it's going to hit that timeline, but he's pretty confident that it will, and I'm excited for it. I love that old show. I didn't watch much of it until Disney Plus came around, and I had a chance to watch it all in a big old binge. And if you haven't had a chance to watch it yet, check it out, because I was really impressed by it. And yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with the next season. I think it's a good idea to just pick it up from where it left off and give us some good 90s nostalgia and not necessarily have to worry about explaining MCU things in any way at all, because you're going to be set in a time when there was no MCU stories going on, you know?
I'm still part of me wonders if my theory is true, that all of the MCU exists because it's all the whole MCU is the House of M storyline, and X-Men 97 is basically going to end. And maybe they already did this storyline in the show, so it wouldn't work, but I heard someone post a theory online. The whole reason they're doing this show is they're going to do like a season or two of this show, and it's going to end with Wanda wishing for no more mutants. And it's going to wipe everything out. So really, the MCU is the same universe as X-Men 97, but just after Wanda wished for no more mutants.
Yeah, I can see them doing that. So I'm curious what comic book storylines and comic book moments they'll bring in, because the original show did a great job adapting directly comic book storylines, you know, Days of Future Past and Dark Phoenix and all of those things. And yeah, I'm curious, yeah, because House of M didn't come out until like 2004, 2005, something like that. So,
So the
series was long gone by then. So I'm curious if they're going to draw from that or any of the other newer X-Men stories.
Yeah. So yeah, that'd be perfect. That's probably why someone had that theory. It's like, this is basically the biggest X-Men storyline after the show ended. So, all right. And ready to hop over to Hulu?
I'm ready, Joe. What do we got on the Hulu side?
Broken Lizard, who is a company known for the movies Beerfest and Super Troopers, is releasing the movie, I believe it's pronounced Quasi, on Hulu, which will be released April 20th, aka 420. I don't really know much about it. I just saw the poster, but the poster looks very much like Viking, kind of mythologically inspired. So I have no idea what this is going to be. Is it going to be set in those times? Is it going to be about a group of people who go to like a Renaissance fair? I really don't know, but just the fact that it's releasing on 420 makes so much sense.
Yeah, it sounds like something that I'll, you know, celebrate the holidays and sit there and watch with my girlfriend, and then we probably will never think about it after we finish watching it, but it'll be a lot of fun.
All right.
Super Troopers brings me back some memories, you know?
I looked up the plot line on... I should have done this. Hey, this show has great. We do care about this show, but sometimes things fall through the cracks and I forget to do things. But plotline, a hapless hunchback yearns for love, but finds himself in the middle of a deadly feud between the Pope and the King of France when they each order the misfit to kill the other. That sounds like a great base for comedy for a group like Broken Lizard. So
that does sound like a lot of fun and a perfect 420 release. You know, I'll be laughing the whole time.
Yep. I'm excited for it. Oh, it makes sense. Quasi, as in Quasimodo. I get it now.
Now I see the connection, Joe.
I got it. All right. And going over to Apple TV, Apple TV Plus. Tristan, you watched the finale of Servant. How was that?
I did. You talked about how I'm a big Zack Snyder fan. I feel like I'm an M. Night Shyamalan fanboy at this point. Like, I've been fully brought back into the M. Night Shyamalan love affair, and most of that was because of this show. I thought the show was surprisingly incredible and really thrilling. And, you know, he found a lot of ways to make really tight spaces thrilling. Almost all of the show takes place in a single apartment, but they barely ever leave the apartment, you know. And it's all about the drama and the mystery and the tension between these characters. And something that Shyamalan deals with a lot is the impact of perception and how the way you see the world and what you believe can change what your experiences are. You know, I talk about something like signs, and I feel like faith and perspective plays so much of a role in that. And even all the way up now to Knock at the Cabin, I feel like it's entirely about perspective and faith and taking these blind leaps into something that might not be totally understandable to you. And Servant and the finale played into all of those ideas perfectly, that those M. Night Shyamalan staples of ambiguity and questioning what you're seeing and kind of wanting to embrace the unknown anyway. He has that in a lot of his films where it's like, you're going to see something scary and unknown, but the right thing to do is to just embrace it and to just embrace your part in the universe and to be glad with your part in the universe. And Servant, I think, is a perfect combination of all those different ideas. It's scary, it's terrifying, and this is a series finale, you know, so this is, he wrapped it up in a perfectly ambiguous but also fulfilling way that is very much M. Night Shyamalan, you know, and I think this is one of his best works in a really, really, really long time. So if you're somebody who's still on the outs with Shyamalan, this could be the one that pulls you back in. And you talk about big acclaimed directors coming in and directing like episodes of TV shows, and people are like, oh, it's the end of the world, you know, this acclaimed person is not doing a new movie, you know. But this show brought in a bunch of indie horror directors. The director, Jennifer Kent, I think the director of The Babadook, came in and directed a couple of episodes. Julia DeCorno, I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, but she directed Titan and Raw, and she came to a couple episodes on here. So there's a great caliber of filmmakers outside of Shyamalan. He even gave some shine to his daughter, who directed a couple episodes. So I like it a lot. It wrapped up really, really well. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. Rupert Grint is in it. He's great. Rupert Grint, you know, underrated actor. Watch this show and get a great Rupert Grint performance.
All right. We may be talking about Rupert Grint a little later in the show. That definitely sounds like a show that you'd be excited about, that I probably won't watch. So our second shirt will be like, I'm probably not going to watch that one. All right, and hopping over to Peacock, our last streaming service of the episode, we have Variety announcing that Monk's getting a reunion movie, a Monk big show in the kind of early mid-2000s. It's officially titled Mr. Monk's Last Case, Mr. Monk's Last Case, a Monk movie. The film sees Monk return to solve one last and very personal case involving his beloved stepdaughter, Molly, a journalist preparing for her wedding. So, seems like a typical Monk kind of storyline. Tony Shalhoub's back, the showrunner's back. Basically, they're bringing everybody back. Tristan, did you ever watch Monk? Do you know anything about it? Do you care
about this? Monk is, you know, a staple of days when you were homesick and you had to watch TV at 1 p.m. on a Wednesday and you're like, oh, I guess Monk is on. I'll watch Monk. And by the time you realize it, kind of gets suckers you in and you have a good time with it. And the characters are fun, you know. So I'll check this one out. I don't necessarily have a bunch of nostalgic love for Monk, but I have plenty of memories for it and I understand the characters enough. So I'm going to have a good time with this, I think.
Yeah, that's about where I'm at. Like, I've seen episodes here and there. If they announce tomorrow that, never mind, the movie's canceled, I'm not exactly going to be bummed, but... You know, if it gets good reviews and people are saying, wow, it's really amazing and could lead to potentially, you know, they call it Mr. Monk's Last Case, but how the entertainment industry, if this gets like insane ratings for Peacock could probably be like, all right, let's crank out a couple more of these Monk TV movies. But
I feel like we've officially hit the point where there are no other IPs to revive, you know, when you're bringing Monk back for a movie or a unit movie. Yeah. I feel like you've peaked, you know, that's a plateau of nostalgia culture here, you know?
Hey, Cold Case. I loved Cold Case back in the day. I believe on CBS, a lot of great talent came through that show. Michael B. Jordan, Tessa Thompson came through that show, who both now in Creed 3. That's a movie that exists.
Great.
But there was I did a whole rewatch when it got put on HBO Max, and it's amazing. Like, every episode, there was just somebody who was a complete unknown at the time and is now, like, an A-list celebrity. So, Cold Case is what needs to be brought back. Anyways, we got some other Peacock news. Days of Our Lives, a show I'd never thought I would talk about on here, but ordered for 2 more seasons at Peacock, which is going to put it through its 60th season. So I just thought...
I think it's interesting. This is the only soap opera that's managed to make it work on streaming. A lot of the other ones have tried and failed almost instantaneously. Yeah. And this one seems like it's actually working out. So good for them. I never watched Days of Our Lives, but I'm glad they're doing well. I know wine moms everywhere are having a good night tonight.
Yeah. I don't know a single difference between any of these soap operas. Like, what's the difference between Days of Our Lives and All My Children and General Hospital? They're all like, these are all just names that take up the same space in my brain of what they all are. Like, I couldn't tell you a single. I assume General Hospital takes place in and around a hospital, but outside of that, I don't know anything about any of these soap operas.
I've watched a handful. I watched One Life to Live for a good amount of time with my mom. I watched General Hospital for a good amount of time with my mom. So yeah, I have some knowledge of the soap operas, Joe. I can fill you in.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think I'll pass on that one, to be honest. And speaking of rebooted and renewing franchises, Bel Air, the more dramatized version of The Fresh Prince of Bel Air, that reboot has been renewed for its 3rd season on Peacock. It started off as just like this trailer this guy put together as like, hey, this is kind of a fun take on Fresh Prince. What if we did a dramatized version? And then Will Smith saw it, and he started working on it and getting it made, and it's now a full-fledged actual series that's now getting 3 seasons.
I can't believe it. Yeah, I remember when it was getting promoted, people were like, oh, that's guaranteed going to suck. And I guess it doesn't super suck because people are watching it, and it's now in its 3rd season. So I didn't give much of a watch to this show. I watched, like, the first episode or so. But if it's good, let me know. I'll give another shot to it.
Yeah, tweet at us at The Hand Plus. That's at THEHANDPLUS. If you're watching Bel Air and you're like, why isn't anyone talking about this? This should be the number one show on television. I say let's bring back Family Matters, but where Steve Urkel is like some weird, just like serial killer kid that lives next door that the family tries to avoid and not let in their house. And I said we talk about Rupert Grint again, and that is because Knock at the Cabin, a movie with Dave Bautista and Rupert Grint, is coming to Peacock on March 25th.
I like this. When I saw this in theaters, I just talked about, I might channel on how much of a fanboy I am of M. Night, but this is a good one. M. Night, Rupert Grint and Dave Bautista and a couple of people show up at this cabin in the middle of the woods, and there's a family living there. Jonathan Groff plays one of the husbands. I can't remember the other actor's name. I had not seen him in anything prior to this, but he was actually really, really good. Yeah, I'd never seen him in anything, but he was a great lead. And the premise is that these people show up and they say, look, the world is ending. The seven plagues are going to befall upon humanity. And the only way you can stop that from happening is by sacrificing one of the three of you, you know? So the two husbands and the daughter had to kind of discuss among themselves, like, are we going to do this? Do we believe this? Are we going to buy into these people's nonsense? And as the days go along, and they start to question, you know, is this real? Is this not real? And you start to kind of question it yourself. Who do you believe? Who's really telling the truth? And something that crazy could have actually be happening, you know? You're playing along with these characters because you don't want to believe it. And you're starting to slowly get bought into the craziness. You're starting to, like, gaslight yourself and buy into the insanity that David Bautista is preaching us. But yeah, Dave Bautista is great in this. You know, you see his big hulking presence. You think he's going to be like this terrifying beast, you know, something like Drax. It's always like tension and high and loud. And he's like really soft-spoken and really quiet and like approachable and nice in this. His character, I believe, is a kindergarten teacher prior to the story. So he plays that really well. He sees like someone that a little kid would come up to and like want to give a big hug to. You know, it's a great performance out of Dave Bautista. And he's talked about wanting to be a lead and wanting to be accepted as, like, you know, an actual dramatic actor, and I feel like this is his biggest step towards being an actual genuine dramatic lead, you know, where he's in a lot of the movie, he's essentially in like every single scene and really selling the performance. So yeah, I love this a lot, and I think if you're a big Dave Bautista fan, you're gonna get a great performance out of Dave here. And Rupert Grint also pretty good in this, has a lot of great scenes, a lot of great shots and of him, and Mike directs the hell out of it. Yeah, I had a great time with this, so I hope that people give it a chance. And you know, M-Light's back on the good side for me. He's had a couple of hits in a row here, so I'm back on the M-Light train.
All right, and that brings us to one of our final topics of the night. Yeah, I love Dave Bautista. I can't wait to see what the rest of his future holds. But this does bring us to one of our final topics of the night, a little bit kind of a sadder topic, and that is remembering Lance Reddick. Lance Reddick, obviously well-known American actor, passed away just a few days ago. At the age of 60, but he's kind of one of those guys that's just been around forever. Like, you look at his history, his acting history, he's basically currently he has something basically on every streaming services right now. We're just kind of go through and talk about him and give our general thoughts. I'll start with some of the stuff he just had some quick appearances in. Tristan, I'll let Tristan talk about some of these things that he just appeared in a couple episodes in, because I know you have more of an attachment to him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking about this conversation, because, yeah, I love Lance Reddick. He's one of my favorite character actors, and it was really a blow to see that he'd passed away. And it's such a relatively young age, you know, 60 is still young to be dying, you know. And he has a lot of projects coming up, and a huge, I think he had like 106 credits on his IMDb of previous work. So that's really impressive. And I'll talk about some of his early TV work, because I definitely know him as a TV actor more than anything else. Yeah. I want to talk about... Look, I think the kick it off with The Wire, I think, is the one to start it with, because The Wire, he had a big role in The Wire, but that was really where I think it put him on the map. He plays this genuinely good cop who is really trying to be mathematical about it, to be practical about it, and The Wire is not always filled with good cops, and I think he shows an example of like what a cop can really be. And he has his flaws, he has his personality failings, you know, but he really wants to do the best job he could possibly do. And he's very by the book, very by the numbers. And he's a great, like, heart and soul of that show. You know, he's the moral compass for a lot of that show. And I think that fits Lance Reddick's personality really well. Yeah. Did you ever watch The Wire, Joe?
I have not. It's one of those shows I've always wanted to get into, but it's also one of those things where you just look at the number of episodes and it's kind of daunting when it's staring you back in the face.
Yeah, I definitely recommend checking it out, because I know it's hugely acclaimed. It's hard to not, you know, I'm recommending The Wire to you, but, you know, it's on HBO Max. There's 5 seasons. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, binge it through. It's not that long of a watch, and it's really, really compelling, especially as the conversation around policing has become more and more and more part of our everyday conversation, right? And I think this show is really, really ahead of the curve on the way it treated race and policing, and Lance Reddick was a huge part of that. You know, he was he was part of both worlds in a way, and that's part of his character too, because he feels like he's part of, you know, the black world as a black man, but he's also part of the cop world as a cop, and he's trying to balance both of those worlds.
Definitely. Yeah, I definitely need to check it out. I just haven't quite gotten to it. One of the movies he's in, it's currently on Amazon Prime, directed by Regina King, and that's One Night in Miami. It came out just a couple of years ago, and if you haven't checked it out, it's basically kind of this fictionalized version of all of these, you know, 60s-era black icons all coming together in a hotel room in Miami. You got Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, just kind of all having their conversations about race and the current politics at the time and what they should be doing and how they can help their communities. And I just think it's a really good movie. Obviously, Lance Reddick's good in it, and kind of a pretty much a lesser known cast. It's not really like stacked with A-list talent, but it does have, you know, good quality actors in there. So if you haven't checked out One Night in Miami, I'd definitely check that out. That's currently on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I really was a fan of One Night in Miami. I definitely recommend checking it out. And I'm going to move on to some of his other TV work that I think is worth mentioning. Some stuff you mentioned, he's in not a lot of episodes, but pretty pivotal episodes. He was in Lost for a four-episode arc. And his arc in this show is kind of like the guiding light of a lot of these characters. He's the one that kind of influences them to come to the island in the first place. And it's kind of mysterious. Of like, who is this guy? Why is he showing up in all these people's lives and kind of being the guiding light that brings them to this mysterious island? And Lost deals a lot with the clash of faith and, like, you know, realism, you know, the realist and then the scientist brain and the faith brain. And I feel like Lance Reddick's character embodies the duality of that, where it's like, maybe you could just be a guy, like a secret agent who's manipulating people's lives and that kind of a thing. Or is he some kind of like spiritual shaman who's guiding these people to the point they're supposed to be at? And the show never gives you a concrete answer on that, like it doesn't do for a lot of things. And I think Lance Reddick's character, even though he's only on there for four episodes, kind of embodies like all the themes of Lost and that duality of faith and science and trying to find a middle ground of both. I think he's a great embodiment of that. And he's so mysterious and so cool. And you saw him pop up for those couple episodes and you're like, I want to see more of what this guy's up to.
Yeah.
I also would like to mention one where he had literally one episode. He was in Wilfred, the Elijah Wood comedy, where Elijah Wood all of a sudden starts seeing his neighbor's dog as a dude in a dog costume that talks to him and smokes weed in his basement all day. And he starts hanging out with the dog and going on these dog adventures. And it's a really funny show. It also deals with some existential questions. And, you know, Ryan is super depressed, the main character. And you wonder, like, did he create Wilfred as some kind of like coping mechanism for his mental illness? And at one point, he goes to a therapist and says, you know what, I'm going to figure out what's really going on. I'm going to figure out my childhood trauma. And he goes to a therapist, and it's Lance Reddick. And Lance Reddick talks him through this kind of trippy flashback sequence where you're not even sure what's real anymore. And, you know, he's going back to his memories, and he's seeing all these weird things. You can see Lance Reddick kind of dryly be very funny because he has that dry, very, very serious delivery. But in this extremely absurd show and setting, it, like, makes it so funny. When you see him saying these very, very ridiculous things as being very, very serious and important, I really recommend Wilfred. It's on Hulu. It's one of the most, I think, underrated shows that's ever aired on TV, you know? And I highly, highly recommend checking it out. And Lance Reddick's episode, I think, is one of the more twisty and fascinating episodes of the show that really dives into, like, the psyche of the character. And Lance Reddick is there, you know, to be the moral center once again.
All right, another show he's on is another, you know, we talked about The Wire. He's also on another show that talks about police and all that, and that's on Amazon Prime, and that's Bosch, a show I haven't checked out. I've heard a lot about. Great reviews. Stars Titus Welliver, who's kind of one of those guys that's similar to Lance Reddick, where you may not know his name, but you see his face, and you're like, oh, I've seen that guy. I recognize that guy. He's good and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I definitely, if you like kind of the dramatized cop type shows, definitely check out Bosch.
It's all on Prime. I believe they have a spinoff right now too, airing on Prime. So the holy cinematic universe around Bosch.
Yeah, who knew that a show like that I feel like is made for the boomers would get so many shows. But then again, boomers love their spinoffs. You get NCIS, NCIS Los Angeles, NCIS Hawaii, NCIS Baton Rouge. Like, maybe it's NCIS New Orleans. Whatever, who cares? But yeah, they love their spinoffs.
I'd also want to mention Fringe really quick. Fringe was a huge show for me. And Lance Reddick appears in 90 out of 100 of the episodes, so he is a pretty major supporting character. And it's funny because they're taking almost the same type of character that he is in The Wire, where he's this very straight-laced, very by-the-numbers, very like physical and practical and reality-based person. And then they throw him into like an X-Files setting where he's dealing with aliens and creatures and werewolves and alternate universes, and you even get to see an alternate universe Lance Reddick where he's like super hot and buff and he's taking his shirt off and all of this stuff. So you get to see Lance Reddick kind of like stretch into the fun side. There's an episode where his straight-laced character accidentally takes LSD and he kind of starts tripping and he starts like acting all goofy, and you get to see Lance Reddick push his acting bounds more than you would expect. And you also get a really fun, essentially X-Files riff, where it's following a fringe division of the FBI that investigates paranormal activities and demons and alternate universes and things like that. And I love that show a lot. It was pivotal for me in like discovering TV beyond just entertainment. TV is like something that you can engage with and theorize around and like go online and talk about and listen to a podcast. You know, I never even heard of a podcast until I started watching Fringe, and I was like, I gotta figure out what's going on with the show Fringe. And then I was like, what's a podcast? What's the Fringe podcast? I gotta check that out. And yeah, it kind of changed the whole way I look at media with Fringe. And I highly, highly recommend it. It's all streaming right now on HBO Max, Amazon Prime, and also for free on Freevee, which is Amazon's free platform. And yeah, Lance Reddick is great in it. He has that straight-laced Wire character, but he also just deals with like straight-up absurd situations that make it really fun to watch.
All right, another two shows he's on, or he lent voices to, is two Netflix animated shows, and that's Paradise PD and Castlevania, two very different shows. But, you know, if you're more of an animation fan and you want to, you know, see what Lance Reddick was all about, you can definitely check out Castlevania and Paradise PD. Castlevania, an animated series based on the game, and Paradise PD, I feel like you can kind of gauge what that show is based purely on the title.
Yeah, Castlevania, I love that. So I'm definitely going to get some rewatches to some of that, I think.
All right. Kind of one of the last two things I wanted to talk about. He's in Godzilla vs. Kong. If you just like, hey, I want to see a Lance Reddick movie, but also I want to see two monsters fight each other, you got Godzilla vs. Kong. And then
You know what I wanted to mention Godzilla vs. Kong too is he literally is a one-scene player in that movie. He shows up for a single scene, gives like a couple of lines, and then just is never seen again for the whole movie, you know? And I feel like that's the perfect embodiment. Lance Reddick shows up, you're like, oh, hell yeah, Lance Reddick is in this. That's awesome. And all of a sudden, the movie's elevated a little bit higher than it was before, and then he just doesn't come back again, you know? Nice. A scene stealer for sure.
And then finally, to end this Lance Reddick love fest, which was well-deserved for him, we have the John Wick trilogy. I believe he's in the upcoming fourth one as well, but they're all streaming on Peacock, and Godzilla vs. King Kong is on HBO Max, if I didn't say that. But yeah, the John Wick trilogy, it, to me, is where Lance Reddick went from a guy who, like, I recognize him to that's every time after I saw that, mm-hmm. I was like, that's Lance Reddick. Like, I know who he is now. You know, he's the kind of leader of the hotel, the Continental. Well, he's not the leader, but he's the concierge, the first face you see kind of when you go into the Continental. And that's kind of the face I know him from, or the space I know him from, and where he became Lance Reddick, and not just, I know that guy.
Yeah, he gives a great performance in those movies, too. He has that, like, cold, by-the-numbers kind of approach, but in the same way, it's comedic, because it's, like, so absurd that he's being so meticulously professional at this hotel for assassins, and he just, like, will straight up lie to John Wick's face and be like, oh, this is not the Continental, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about, and It's a really fun performance. I'm sad that he's obviously gone now, but it's gonna really be effective to watch John Wick 4 next week and see him for what will be like one of his last movie roles, you know? I know that at the premiere they handed out little blue ribbons and stuff like that. They kinda wanted to honor him the whole time they were there, you know. So I'm imagining that it's gonna be very hard to watch, but also, you know, like you said, this is a role that made him a household name for a lot of people, so I'm glad that it's one of the ones that gets to go out on.
Yep, for sure. All right, so I think that kind of wraps up our show for the week for the most part. We have one final topic, and that is our MVP of the week. And I have my nomination. I want to see if you what you have for a nomination.
Yeah, my nomination. We just talked about him for half an hour and half the podcast. So how do you not give it to Lance Reddick? You know, he's a great actor, huge character actor staple. all these shows wouldn't be the same if he wasn't in them. You know, The Wire without Lance Reddick is not The Wire. Lost without Lance Reddick in those couple episodes doesn't feel the same. Fringe, no Lance Reddick, is not a recognizable show to itself, you know. So I got to give it to Lance Reddick. Everyone's been handing up praise to him, telling all these great stories about how nice he was. Keanu Reeves had some great, great words to say about him and working with him and how much they got along, you know. And Keanu is not really a social person, but he made a point to always want to hang out with Lance and to spend his time with Lance. And, you know, he wanted to spend his birthday with Lance Reddick. And I think that's a great sign of how nice and kind and genuine Lance Reddick is, you know. Yep. So shout out to him. It's sad to see him go. If you're going to go with 106 credits to your name, video games, TV shows, movies, anything you can think of, that's a pretty great way to go out, you know. Go play Destiny 2, listen to Lance Reddick, give you some orders.
All right, yeah, I agree. For all of the things he's currently on that you can watch him on right now, he's got an upcoming movie. Our MVP for the week of March 21st, 2023 is Lance Reddick. And with now, one final thing before we end the show. Tristan, in honor of Days of Our Lives getting 60 seasons, if you had to give one narrative show 60 seasons, what would you pick?
Oh, God, 60 seasons. I got to think of something that just absolutely does not require 60 seasons. You know, what does Freaks and Geeks look like for 60 years? God. You know, are they in high school for 60 years? Are they going to drag that out the whole time, graduate, you know?
Yeah, or do we just follow, like, one high school and the kids come in and age out over time? And, you know, honestly, something like that, I mean, it would basically devolve into Degrassi or something like that. But I think it would be kind of cool, you know, you see Linda Cardellini and her character, and then you bring her back in, like, 20 years where she's now the mom of one of the main characters.
Yeah, you could bring people back as, like, a teacher or a principal or something, switch up the rules. I could see that really working.
Yeah, I like that pick. My pick was going to be The Simpsons because, hey, it's gone for 30 years. What's 30 more? You're not going to ruin a show by having it go on that long. And then to just say, hey, The Simpsons was an animated cartoon show that ran for 60 seasons, that's something. It had 5 good ones and 55 bad ones, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Simpsons actually makes it to 60, you know? I feel like that's going to happen.
Who watches it? Maybe I've talked about it before on the show, but if you're someone that when The Simpsons has a new episode, you're there watching it live on Fox, tweet at us at The Hand Plus. We will dedicate an hour of this show interviewing you. I don't care if it's House of the Dragon Season 2 Finale Week. I would rather talk to a person who is a diehard, I watch The Simpsons every week kind of person.
I gotta know what you're like, you know. I gotta know what else you watch, yeah. You know. Is it just Family Guy and The Simpsons and South Park? You know, yeah. You gotta stick to the classics.
Yeah, what's that comedy block that Fox has? I forget. Animation Domination. Is that like your like favorite thing in the world? Do you have like a Stewie forearm tattoo? Like, what's going on in your life? I need to know. Tweet at us at The Hand Plus. That's at @THEHANDPLUS, and we will gladly have you on this show. I think that wraps up our show. Without further ado, goodbye.